After a four-year break, seminal alt-rock band Yesair is back with a dazzling new release titled Amen and Goodbye. We sat down with Yesair's Aned Wilder to talk about the record, the farm that it was recorded on, and how things have changed since the band came together almost 10 years ago.
I'm De Jackson from the Fox Glove Player. Hello.
Aned, hi. Thanks so much for reaching out. I was thinking, once I found out that you guys were releasing a new record, I was like, I should probably get in touch to see if they want to do an interview. And then you did the work for me. So that was great.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, when you have a relationship with someone, it's easier to just like cut out the middleman, I think.
No, I understand. Which, you know, in the past, I like getting a hold of you for the interview we did like 2 years ago, I had to go through, I think, two people to make sure it was going to happen, like the promoter, the AAA person, and all kinds of stuff. So you're right, it was definitely easier. I guess I should start off, like, how are you doing? What's new with you?
Doing good. You know, now it's just, like, waiting for this album to come out, sort of planning this release party that we're going to have next week.
And, ooh.
We have to start practicing all these songs and getting ready to go out on tour. We haven't been on tour for such a long time, so.
Yeah, I mean, the last record came out almost 4 years ago. So you guys have been in this. I mean, you've released stuff with Breakline, which we'll get to in a second. But really, I mean, what has everyone else in the band been up to? Have they been releasing side projects or have they just been quiet?
Well, you know, Breakline came out and we were upstate. I feel like I was talking to you maybe when I was even upstate recording.
Mm-hmm, you were.
Yeah. So the other guy, you know, Chris had a baby. He has like a 1.5-year-old.
Oh. So,
and they both bought houses upstate, so there's been a lot of, like, working on houses. And then really just the album has taken a long time. You know, it's been fits and starts, but we've been working on it since 2013, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, because when we last spoke, so for anyone listening, the last time we spoke was almost 2 years ago, and you know, I just started the show Change of Tune, and I was just going through people I could interview for the show as like a side project sort of thing. And then I stumbled upon this Appalachian rock opera and had no idea that, you know, you, Aned Wilder, were like a part of it and that you were a part of Yesair because I was being silly. That was about 2 years ago when that happened. And you were in the studio. I think I called you a couple times to do promos and stuff, and you were like, you had to walk out of the studio in order to do something for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, we were upstate recording at this place called Outlier Inn. And it was just on this beautiful farm. There was like a fiber farm, so they had Angora bunnies and all these goats.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah. Did you take any of them home with you?
I didn't, but I did buy my wife a Angora bunny hat, which is just like the warmest hat possibly.
Oh, I want to search for it now just so I can see what it looks like. Oh, it's not actually like it's not shaped like a bunny. It's just made from like the bunny hair.
Yeah, these bunnies just get huge, I think. And if they get too much hair, then they start eating their own hair and they like choke on it.
What?
So you have to shave them. But yeah, we would you know, take a break and watch the owner of the bunnies just like shave them.
I'm looking at a picture now. They're so cute, especially the ones that have too much hair, and they just look like snowballs and with like little noses.
Big puffballs, yeah.
Oh, that's so cute. That's like my hair if I don't treat it right. Oh, that's so cute. Oh, so were the bunnies an inspiration for the record? Like, did you kind of look at them and then think about, you know, psychedelic indie rock and kind of channel them? Yeah.
It was more just like a nice break to get out of the studio. You know, when you're in seclusion up in the semi-wilderness, you know, it's just nice to be like, okay, let's take a break, let's go to the waterfall and go swimming, or let's go pet some bunnies. It just feels like a safe place, you know, instead of being like in the city and let's go outside and get more coffee at the coffee shop, you know.
Is that how the last three records were recorded, in the city, or were they also kind of in a outdoor area?
Odd Blood, we recorded in a similar manner. It wasn't at a studio, but it was. We rented a house from actually this guy who was the drummer for like Peter Gabriel in the 80s.
Wow!
And he was planning on selling his house, and then we just rented it from him. And he had all this amazing equipment. So So that was sort of similar, but this was more of a proper studio upstate. And we had an engineer with us, and you know, we there were little Airbnb lodgings where we could stay that were right next to the studio.
Interesting. Well, so around that time, you know, you were working on Breakline and the promotion for that. How was Breakline for you in the aftermath? Like, did you learn anything about that side project and releasing it?
Well, I learned that, you know, just being on Wilder from Yesayer does not mean that you can put an album out and expect it to sell well. I think we probably have already sold more copies of the new Yesayer than I've sold of Breakline.
Oh.
But, you know, it was a strange project, and I didn't do much promotion around it except for, you know, your show.
My show had the brunt of it. We were supposed to kind of lift you guys up, but we just couldn't do it. Well, I liked it. I mean, it you're right. It had so many components to it too. I mean, besides the whole rock opera thing, you had all these different, you know, indie alternative people involved. It was a kind of complex project, but I still would have thought that people would have gotten into it. Even if they didn't listen to the whole record, there were still some singles that you could have just played like anything else.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think when we go out on tour as Yesayer, we'll probably bring some of the vinyl and the CDs on tour, I assume, and just have them out on the merch table so maybe it can have a second wind.
Yeah. They'll be like, oh, Breakline, is that like an EP from Yesayer? And you can just kind of nod your head. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a collector's item.
Well, it's a shame. I did like it, but... You know, I guess you just move forward. I wonder though, are you, because I mentioned before, like around that time you released it, West Virginia had like a chemical spill that was major. And now Flint, Michigan has a chemical water situation. Do you think that a sequel would be in the works for Breakline?
That would be really good. Actually, that's a good idea. I'll take a note of that. Get my co-writer to start writing songs about lead poisoned kids. It is so crazy, that stuff. And Flint, oh my God.
Yeah,
it just seems like that it should be like the only topic of conversation in the election. You know, it's like we're so concerned with these like fear mongering and terrorist attacks, and then you're like, wait, but we're poisoning ourselves.
Yeah, but we're not going to feel the effects of it for like 20 years, so they can just put it on the table and then we'll deal with it when we start growing heads or, you know, turning copper. It's fine, it's not a big deal, whatever. So Yesayer, new record, it's the fourth release, coming out April Fool's Day. Do you pronounce it amen in goodbye, or do you say amen in goodbye?
I always say amen. It's funny, when people say amen, it always seems much more reverent to me, whereas amen and goodbye just sounds like a sign-off, like, all right, see you later, amen and goodbye.
Yeah, well, I grew up, so I went to Catholic school for the longest time, and so when I did, you know, that was kind of ingrained in me to say amen. But you're right, like amen's kind of the, you know, colloquial kind of laid back sort of way. Yeah. So amen and goodbye, what is it to you all? What is it about?
Whew, wow.
We're getting to the hard hitting questions right now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's about there's so much of the process is all wrapped up in it for me. So I think about the journey these songs have gone on, you know. We got dropped by our record label, and that was 2013, and then we had to say, like, okay, what are we going to do now? Are we going to make another album? Are we going to do it ourselves? Are we going to look for another record label? So that's part of, like, the title is, like, okay, we had this long process, but now let's not be precious about it. Let's just put it out. We got to get it out into the world. But, you know, I mean, I think we were also kind of reflecting on all this societal talk about, you know, religion and xenophobia and everything, and I think that was playing into the record. It was sort of our own religious manifesto, and we kind of tried to tie the album together. So it's loosely a concept album where we have recurring themes and motifs that keep coming back, and we were kind of working with the album as this kind of, it's this antiquated form, you know, where people listen to songs just on YouTube, and we were saying, okay, well, we're making an album. Let's make a proper album where we have connecting lyrical themes and musical motifs. So, and I just think that a lot of it is a lot of the songs are very personal to me, and I feel like I've said things that I have wanted to say about, you know, a friend that I've lost, and having a baby, and then more broader themes of religiosity.
I read in the press release that the record is a collection of strange fables from the Bible of a universe that does not yet exist. Why did you choose to go through, make a record that kind of focuses on those sorts of themes in particular? I mean, you could have chosen, you know, Christopher Columbus, whatever, but instead you chose something that kind of mimics, you know, maybe some Old Testament, New Testament imagery. And why is that?
I think it's because it's something that is, I find to be so frustrating in contemporary life, that we're still kind of constantly dealing with these ideas that seem to be very kind of antiquated and medieval. I think a lot of the times, you know, religious freedom can be just another excuse to enforce kind of patriarchy. And so we wanted to deal with it. I mean, we could make the next one about Christopher Columbus.
Please don't. I'm so sorry I mentioned that.
No, there's a lot of issues that you could definitely raise with that. But somehow, religion is something that's a little bit more, easy to deal with in a song without seeming like that. You know, if you're talking about Christopher Columbus, that really would seem like a musical.
Again, if you just go back to the musical, but I mean, you mentioned it, but here, this has a theme. It kind of goes through different, not chapters, but different kind of sections, and it does have that kind of biblical journey to it, and especially with the cover art. I mean, you and the other members of Yesair are walking out of a cave holding a baby. Some could say that's like Lion King, or some could say that's like a sort of Messiah trope.
Right. Well, or it's also, I think it's is sort of a child sacrifice too, because the sand sculpture in the center of the album cover relates to Moloch, who's like this ancient, I think, Babylonian god of sacrifice. So that was kind of like playing around with that imagery.
So you're sacrificing a baby in the record.
Yeah, but there is a duality, because on the other side, that I think you see the same baby being breastfed.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Well, so the baby's safe then. They're like, no, we're not going to take this baby. You keep him.
Baby's okay.
Yeah, he'll be safe. Well, speaking of the record and the cover art for it, if Amen and Goodbye is ear-catching, then the cover art for it is just eye-catching. I mean, there's so many things to look at, you know, so many different sculptures and just types of design and artwork. There's even a cameo from the creature from Matter Red with Kristen Bell, that music video, which is nice. Just right. How did the cover art come to be?
So Chris got in touch with David Altman. He had been a fan of his art for a really long time. And then we had the idea that we wanted to use all these different characters from our previous songs, like you said, like Matter Red, the video. I think there was a song on Odd Blood called Griselda that was based on this criminal named Griselda Blanco. And so we had this list of all these different characters from songs from the past, songs that we were working on. You know, a couple characters were from songs that didn't even make the cut of the album. And we sent all these characters to David Altman, and then he came up with characters of his own, you know, from news items, or I think there's like a Donald Trump's head is in there.
Yeah, I saw that, and it looks like it's deformed and, you know, kind of cut in two and red, like it's been through a fire or chemical spill. Yeah,
yeah, it sort of like post, like a riot that would, you know, get rid of him as the leader of our country. That's the result or something. So he just kind of put together this a tableau, and we didn't know if we were going to be putting it together digitally, but he really wanted to do a shot, just a one single shot that would be the gatefold. And, you know, we gave him a lot of references from Sgt. Pepper to Prince's Around the World in a Day, you know, other kind of albums that had a lot of different characters, and he came up with his own thing.
So you mentioned Donald Trump. I see Mark Twain. Is Diana Ross in there too? Is that who I'm saying? Like, kind of lounging on the ground?
No. She's supposed to be like a silent movie starlet.
Okay. I was going to say with the hair kind of looked like her, but okay. So who else has a role in this tableau?
Well, we're in there, and it's sort of our earlier versions of ourselves. And who else? We have a Bob Fosse dancer in the top left corner. Who else? Moloch, that god of child sacrifice. and then Bommel. Bommel is the name of the character from the Matter of Men video.
Oh, okay, cool.
We have a song that didn't make the cut that was called Lone Shark Brothers, and he interpreted that, and that's like the funny kind of two-dimensional cartoon of the guy holding a suitcase with money in it. So it was sort of like you would just give him a little bit of inspiration, and then he would let his imagination run wild, and everything he came up with was fantastic.
And I read somewhere that Kris Jenner was also in this.
Yeah, on the cover he has it's like a sculpture of Ira transitioning into Caitlyn Jenner, and then she transitions into a butterfly.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that was it.
I could see this being a little controversial between the Donald Trump, the baby sacrifice, Jenner. Do you think that's going to be the case? Do you think people are going to make a big deal out of it?
Are we courting controversy?
Yes.
I don't know. You know, I hadn't thought about it. I think if we were like a really big band, like Coldplay or U2 or something, that maybe it would be.
Oh, they would never do that, though. You know, Chris
right.
Martin would never do this kind of thing. He's still wearing rainbows. Like, who? No,
yeah,
he's safe.
He's not that clever. yeah, I mean, I suppose if we got sued, that would probably be good for us, because then that would be, some attention that we could get. But I don't see it happening. Maybe it will. Because really only bands that are really big get sued. Because every song sounds like another song. It's only once a song gets really big, you know, that people start saying, oh, wait a second, isn't that Sam Smith song just a Tom Petty ripoff?
But he got away with it, though. It sounded like they settled or he acknowledged it or
no,
something.
No, Tom Petty now gets a certain percentage of the songwriting royalties.
Yeah, which, you know, that's pretty good. Because I know with when Demi Lovato and I think it was Sleigh Bells. Like Sleigh Bells was saying, they were saying that Demi Lovato took two bits of their songs, and then you heard nothing from that. I don't think Sleigh Bells got anything from it, but you know, yeah, that's.
I don't know. Maybe
yeah, that was kind of
because they Sleigh Bells took that Parliament, that Funkadelic song, right?
Yeah.
But they must have given songwriting credit to, because that was just like a sample.
Yeah. Has anyone sampled your music or Yesayers?
I don't know, but that would be awesome. Oh, you know, I think Childish Gambino took a sampled Sunrise.
Oh, okay.
Song, I think. Or maybe Tightrope, he did something like that. But I don't know if anybody's explicitly sampled us. That's something that hopefully I can look forward to 20 years from now, you know, when I'm a middle-aged, angry, washed-up has-been. And I can say, like, oh, that guy stole my...
Well, hopefully they'll figure out the streaming rights. They'll figure out how much money you should be getting, because I know right now Johnny Cash's family, they're not getting anything from his music past, I think it's like 1954. So they're not getting anything. So if you stream it, if you do whatever online, nothing from his estate.
Huh.
Yeah. So hopefully in 20 years from now, when you're an angry old man, you'll get some money from it, or not. You know, you could just be more angry. That's fine too. So in the poster, I want to mention one more thing about the tableau, and it's Yay Slayer. The poster in the background. Did you guys come up with that? Or did David come up with that?
I think, you know, we always joke about Yay. We always have said Yay Slayer. I forget exactly how that came about. But I think the poster was David asking us for what was the worst press photo that we ever did. And I think that's the one where we're, like, throwing a Campbell's soup jar up in the air, and it's this horrible photo that followed us from like our very early days, and that was his idea to say, okay, I'm gonna take the worst photo and make a make a crappy poster for you in the background.
I love Ye Slayer. I hope that you guys, like, if you disband and come back together, you should reform as Ye Slayer. Or there's a cover band out there. That's what they should do. That's a great name. A horribly great name.
Yeah. We'll just cover what's their big album, Rain and Blood.
Yeah, why not? It's perfect.
Lessons always whistling, hear him stopping up and down the hall. Oh, oh, oh. His vitriol's a missile and it wields his temper like a wrecking ball. Oh, oh, oh.
Okay, so with the record itself, I noticed that you guys had a little bit of a collaboration with Suzzy Roach from the Roaches. And also Lael Neal, who I've played on my show a time or two or three.
Oh, wow. Great. Oh, cool.
Yeah, no. And so I was looking at the liner notes, and then because Suzzy has been on Mountain Stage, our NPR program here, God, I don't even know how many years. Her whole family basically has been on the show however many times. And then when I saw Lael Neal, I was like, oh, that name sounds so familiar. I wonder why. And it's because I think I played her last release. I think it was last year when it came out. Yeah, so how, I guess both of them are based up in New York, and that's how you got them involved in the project?
No, actually, so Suzzy, I saw in a play. The play was called Early Shaker Spirituals. It was, are you familiar with that record?
Yeah.
Early Shaker Spirituals? So the Wooster Group in Manhattan put on this play, and it was Suzzy Roach, Elizabeth Lecomte, who's also the head of the Wooster Group, the founder, and then Frances McDormand. And they were reenacting this record. So someone on the side of the stage was playing the record, and they were hearing it in their ears, and you could kind of hear it, and they were just speaking along with the record and then singing these Shaker spirituals from the record. And I saw the name Suzzy Roach in the program, and I was like, is that the same Suzzy Roach as from the Roaches? And I knew someone who was in the Wooster Group, and I asked him if I could get her email. He gave it to me, and I just wrote to her and said, hey, do you want to sing on the Ye Slayer record? I don't know if she'd ever heard of us, but I sent her the demos of the songs, and she was like, oh, these are great. And she came by, and she just did one day in the studio, and she was really cool, really fun to hang out with. Consummate professional.
And she was on I Am Chemistry, and what was the other song that she helped with?
She also sings on Half Asleep and Gerson's Whistle.
Okay, that's right. And Lael Neal only showed up on I Am Chemistry.
Lael was a friend of Joey Warnker, so we actually weren't even there when she sang the part. But I think when Joey was mixing, he was kind of doing a preliminary mix for the record, and he thought that he needed another vocal to thicken up Suzzy's voice. So Lael's in there as well on I Am Chemistry.
Sweet. And did anyone else?
She's great. We saw her perform in L.A. Great voice, beautiful voice.
Yeah, no, I liked her. And the release was I'll Be Your Man. And I remember playing a few singles from that on A Change of Tune. It was great. That's cool. So you had those two girls on. Did anyone else help with the process of writing this record or contributing to it?
Well, I wouldn't say with writing. You know, when we were upstate in Outlier Inn, the engineer was Abe Seaforth, and he was really great. And then when we came back to New York, that was when we got most of the collaborators to come in. You know, we had Joe McGinty play piano and Delicate Steve. Do you know Delicate Steve?
Mm-hmm, of course.
Yeah, so Steve came in. He's just always game, and he's such a good musician. So he did a lot of guitar. Some stuff that we would say, oh, can you play it like this? And then other stuff was just like, let's just go solo. Just do whatever you want. And then Sean Smith and Walter Fancourt, who you might know from, you know the band Reptar?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so they're the horn section from Reptar.
Oh, sweet.
Who we met on tour a couple of years ago.
Nice. And
so
did they
play some horns.
Did I read somewhere that you, one of the songs was produced by, was it the guy, the drummer for Adams for Peace?
Oh,
right?
The whole thing was, yeah.
Okay.
Joey Walker produced the whole thing. Oh, yeah.
Okay, okay.
So after when we came back from upstate, then we hired Joey, and he came to New York, and we kind of deconstructed the album and put it back together again. it under his guidance.
Oh, that's cool. So you just had so many people involved in this. Is that more people than you've typically had in the past?
Yeah, maybe. We always like to get other people because we're so limited in our instrumental skills. So it's always good to get people involved. I would say the first album, we didn't have that. We had like a couple horn players and some singers. But since then, yeah, we've definitely used the help of outside musicians.
Oh, with a little help from my friends. That's great.
Yeah.
So I'll kind of conclude the conversation. One of my favorite songs off the record would probably be Dead Sea Scrolls. I've had that on repeat. It's probably one of my new favorite Yesair songs. Can you talk a little bit about that song and whether or not it might be a single coming up?
I think that is going to be a single. I don't know. I think the debate is still on whether it's going to be a single in the U.S., but I think it is going to be the third single in the UK. I mean, the single, all these things are so confusing to me because we've already put out four songs mm-hmm. and download. And yeah, I'm so curious about, do people even buy records anymore? Because, you know, you just subscribe to like a streaming service and then you could just have the album and you just play it. But I guess in terms of like a single that, you know, solicited to radio stations, I think that that probably will be one, maybe between that one and Cold Night. But yeah, it's a very cool song.
Yeah. Well, it's a good record. I mean, I'm Chemistry is great. You know, Dead Sea Scrolls, Cold Night, you know, Gerson's Whistle is also a good one. I like that one a lot.
They're all great.
Yeah. It's a good record. I mean, what do you hope comes about from this record? What do you hope is the reaction or what happens as a result?
Oh, God. I mean, I just, my goals are, like, so minimal. I just want people to, I need to, like, stop reading reviews because that just gets me down. But I really just want, you know, to remain kind of culturally relevant and be able to keep making music with without having to make too many artistic compromises. It's just, you know, this is, like, the dream that I had as, like, a little kid listening to Beck and the Beatles and, you know, just, oh, maybe I could do that one day. So I'm just sort of living the dream and hoping that it can keep going.
Well, I think it would. I mean, you guys have been around for like almost 10 years now. You've been doing great. So you'll probably have another 10 years, maybe 20, maybe 30.
Yeah.
Just keep at it. Don't die. You're fine.
The average is what, like 2 years, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now that's also a different work ethic. You know, it's a different culture. You guys started up in a time when like Twitter wasn't as big or where, you know, streaming and Spotify weren't as big. And now it's a different landscape. So people can just switch and match.
It seemed like when we came out, I remember doing interviews at the very beginning about downloading and you know, why do people buy records? But even in the last 10 years, it's changed so much. With each record, there's a new innovation, you know, there's, you know, I think it was Odd Blood where people were telling me, oh, I heard you on Spotify. And I remember saying, what? What is this? What are you talking about?
And who knows? Maybe that could be music? Like a Napster thing where it might somehow just collapse in the years to come. Or maybe it's going to go just as big as like Apple. You know, I don't know. Trends. Who knows? Well, what do you think about streaming, though? Like, what are your thoughts on that and whether it's helping or hurting the music industry?
I don't know. It just sort of is. It just exists, and that's what we're working with right now. And I use it. I subscribe to, you know, Apple Music just because it's just so convenient as a consumer to say, oh, I want to listen to Bob Dylan right now. Okay, I can just look it up and have any record and listen to any record. I think it takes away some of the romance of like buying a record and not knowing what you're going to get and putting it on and listening very intently. But it's just sort of the way of progress. I mean, the whole history of recorded music has been based on technological advances, you know, from 78 to, you know, 45, 33, and then, you know, tape, CDs. I mean, I always think about how when CDs came out, when I was first buying CDs when I was, you know, 5 years old, they had those weird long packaged long cases. And that was just ridiculous. But that was what I would fetishize as a little kid. I would just, like, cut up those cases and keep them in my drawer, and, like, look at all the, you know, the album artwork on these CD cases. So I don't know what people are doing now, if it's all just on their cell phone and it's so small and you can't really, like, hold it and look at the lyrics, which is kind of sad to me. But, you know, in terms of, like, the artist's compensation, I think there is room for streaming to work because, you know, I guess if someone buys a CD, they're just paying the artist, you know, whatever it is, $3 at that one point in time. Whereas streaming, if someone listens to my record over and over and over again, I think that plays into the percentage of the profits that are then funneled to the artist. And I don't know if that'll ever be the equivalent of CD sales or record sales, but, you know, it's something. It's better than downloading for free. I think there could be some kind of, you know, tax, like a streaming tax that they could impose on people who do a lot of streaming, and or some kind of internet company tax that could then be funneled towards artists. But it is kind of scary because it does seem like content creators are just getting screwed. And I don't know if that plays into why artists only have very short careers, because they're just not able to make it work.
Yeah.
So you have touring, and touring works, but touring is a risky thing, and, you know, we don't have health insurance, and, you know, you're traveling around in a van in the dead of winter. But, you know, I can't complain.
Well, you know, especially for younger artists, the ones that, like you said, like maybe they're going to break up within 2 years or whatever, they go to SoundCloud, they go to, you know, Bandcamp, they put up a record for free, and they, you know, they put up for free or pay what you will kind of price strategy, and they might not get any money off it, but maybe
right.
It's in exchange for exposure. Like, someone may download it, maybe someone from NPR Music will find it and then help them become big. But that's
yeah.
not always the case. How many bands out there, and how many actually get showcased?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel lucky that we're even part of the conversation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the one thing is that with this record in particular, the packaging's so pretty. And if you, it just encompasses this record, and even the liner notes. Like, how would I have known that Lael Neal was a part of it if I hadn't had the physical copy with me to show me that she, you know, helped with it.
Oh, so you actually got a...
Yeah, I have it right here in my hand. I've been looking at it the entire time. It's gorgeous.
Oh, the vinyl or the...
No, not the vinyl, just the CD.
Oh, great. Okay. Wow, I haven't even seen the CD.
Yeah, they gave me a digital download, and then I opened the mail today, and it was right there. And I was like, oh, this is great. So I can actually bring the copy with me when I do the interview. So I've been listening, looking at it while you've been talking ever since. You've been a good soundtrack to the soundtrack. It's
yeah, cool. I haven't. That's funny. I haven't seen the CD yet.
It's gorgeous.
I need
a good job.
To my grandma.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, okay. So I guess kind of wrap up the interview. Do you have anything that you'd like to mention about the record that I didn't get a chance to talk about?
No, I never know what to say when someone asks. Is anything else you want to say? Oh, no. I'm very proud of this record. I think it's our best record so far.
I like it too. And I think the thing is, it kind of brings back Yay Sayer memories, and but it's new, and I don't know. It just brings me back to when I was in college in a really good way. So
awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think working on it for so long made it so that we had to keep whittling away at it, and something that we were really excited about 3 years ago just didn't stand the test of time. So I think we were able to put forth our, you know, 10 best songs, you know, and hopefully that'll have some lasting power.
I think so. And now I have the physical copy, so it's going to stay with me forever. Even if my computer dies, it's going to stay with me.
Until that plastic CD corrodes.
Oh, don't worry about that. It's fine.
Decomposes.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's cool for the environment. So do you have maybe a final, like, fun fact or something about yourself or the band that people may not know about, or maybe even about this record?
Fun fact. Ugh.
Like, you mentioned the bunnies. That was a cool fun fact.
The bunnies is a cool fact. Yeah, I mean, we also had to contend with chickens, too, that were coming into the the vocal booth. If we left the vocal booth open, the chickens would just walk right in.
Seriously? Did they come in a couple times and, like, you got them on tape?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why didn't you put that in the record?
Hustled them out. Yeah, you know, we already did chickens, actually. If you look up the Dark Was the Night.
The compilation.
Dark Was the Night. We did, like, a takeaway show where we sang Tightrope acoustic. And I think I was playing the banjo. Ira was playing, like, a little keyboard flute. And then Chris played this loop of chicken noises. So, you know, we'd already done it. We don't like to repeat ourselves.
I cannot wait to see what animal comes into play with the next record, whether that's like 2, 3 years, 4 years. Like, hopefully it's a cow or a moose or a duck. Yesir's fourth full-length, Amen and Goodbye, is available now. You could follow the band on Twitter and Facebook at Yesir. You could follow this show, A Change of Tune, at A Change of Tune. And to hear more from Yesir, tune in to A Change of Tune, airing Saturdays at 10 p.m. Eastern on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.